Migrant Matters Radio.
Escucha Asuntos del Inmigrante. Aquí nosotros somos apasionados en explorar asuntos de migración, de los trabajadores inmigrantes y de la gente que no tiene estatus migratorio, y dando a conocer las historias de individuos que nosotros no podemos oír en los medios convencionales. Los asuntos del inmigrante se centran en desacreditar mitos de migración, que a menudo han sido favorecidas por medios convencionales y la política actual de migración. Por esta, su emisora local, CFRU 93.3 FM.
Es, para mí es algo nuevo, es muy gratificante para toda la gente que está trabajando aquí, porque todo el tiempo están trabajando, todo el tiempo están sintiendo la presión, y esto es un desahogo muy, muy bueno para todos. Muy bien.
So this is a new experience for him. He feels very grateful because a lot of the people here, they're always working, and they're constantly working, so for them it's a good break and it's a good enjoyment.
Tell us about your family. What do you think there's enough community outreach in Denver? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Entonces, normalmente, aparte de este evento, ¿cómo sientes que la comunidad de Bradford los apoya? ¿O como regularmente? ¿O son estos eventos son como especiales porque no son
especiales? Sí, bueno, en la iglesia hacen un convivio después de la misa. Poca gente asiste porque muchos están trabajando el domingo precisamente, o no tienen forma de llegar a la misa. Entonces, estos eventos son muy seleccionados, o son pocos realmente. La comunidad en general está ocupada. Es lo que hay en Brasil.
So this event is sort of special. Usually the church does provide some sort of outreach. They often do meetings after the mass. Oftentimes a lot of workers find it hard to get to the mass. It's a little bit dispersed. Attendance is not widespread. So these events are sort of special on a daily basis. Bradford is a busy town, so there's not a lot of outreach because people are busy, so he would say that this is pretty special of an occasion.
How long have you been coming up to Bradford or to Canada for?
Tengo 3 meses y 3 months.
¿Y eso es tu primer año? ¿Cómo te está gustando? ¿Cómo piensas el programa? ¿O aquí en 3 meses no es mucho tiempo?
No mucho, pero bueno, para trabajo está bien. Para vivir, hay muchas situaciones que no... El programa ayuda mucho, pero no hay mucho.
The work is good, but there's a lot of situations that are hard to understand. The program does help a lot, but there's a lot of missing information.
Do you have anything to talk to share about the workers program that a lot of Canadians might not know about?
The only thing is he's only worked for
3 months,
but...
I guess to my question, what do people back home talk about when they talk about the program?
Como en México, ¿qué es la impresión del programa en México? ¿O qué piensa la gente del programa en México?
Es una gran ayuda. Lo ven como una salida muy... es una oportunidad especial, ¿sí? Mucha gente se ayuda, realmente... Es una oportunidad que no se le da a todos, es muy selectivo. En la Secretaría de Trabajo en México hacen sorteos. Cada estado le da un determinado número de solicitudes, acepta las solicitudes. Más ahora que estoy aquí en Canadá, me doy cuenta que las oportunidades son más grandes de lo que aparenta realmente en tu programa. Pero vuelvo a lo mismo, no dan la información completa. Es muy bueno porque sí se ayudan de verdad económicamente, salen de muchos problemas. La gente logra resolver muchas situaciones económicas, que es parte de lo que conlleva el programa. Eso es lo que yo siento que es más importante del programa, la ayuda que realmente recibe.
So they view the program as a big help, like as a very sort of valuable economic opportunity. It's very selective, so they see it as, you know, a lucky kind of a situation when they are selected to come to the program. The Ministry of Labor often, it's almost like a draw kind of thing. Each state is given a certain number of available spots to send as part of the program. And so, again, it's seen as a big opportunity for those who are accepted. The only thing is, when he did come to Canada, he found that the opportunities here are wider, or are, like, there's more opportunities than they are told about in Mexico. So again, this like speaks to his idea that there's a lack of information given to people, to them, I mean, about the different opportunities. However, he does think that, you know, the program helps a lot of people get out of, you know, economic hardships and resolve some negative economic situations. So in that sense, it is beneficial in economically.
How has your experience been so far in Canada, in Brantford?
Entonces, ¿cómo estuvo a esta fecha? ¿Cómo estuvo la experiencia que has tenido en Bradford?
En Bradford, sí, la comunidad, muy tranquila. A mí me ha servido, independientemente de todo lo que yo vengo de México, a mí me sirve mucho porque es un lugar tranquilo. La comunidad es muy agradable y me ha recibido muy bien, ¿no? En ocasiones he tenido la oportunidad de salir de una noche a ir al restaurante, a bar, y la gente es muy, muy, muy agradable. Dan la oportunidad de que uno se acerque a ellos, a poder convivir y sentirse pues no tan lejos de casa. El único detalle pues es que pocos venimos, bueno, más bien la mayoría venimos sin el idioma de inglés, que eso dificulta un poquito las cosas. Pero, bueno, es de cada quien el hecho de quererlo aprender y el tiempo que le dedique uno. Y pocas las oportunidades. El programa sí lo da, pero dado las condiciones de trabajo o la cantidad de trabajo que en ocasiones no les permite descansar algunos días más que para ir a comprar sus alimentos y regresar a la farm, solamente así.
So far his experience in Bradford has been positive. He finds it as a very calm and nice community. He feels that he's been pretty well received. He's had the opportunity to go out at nighttime and see a few things, go to restaurants and enjoy himself. The only thing that he views is that the language barrier is a big sort of impediment to connecting with people. He feels that otherwise people have been open to relating to him and to trying to open sort of relations with him kind of thing. But yeah, the language barrier has been big. He says that, you know, that can definitely be overcome by workers learning English, but he finds that the nature of the program, or more so the work schedule, is not very accommodating to that. He says, you know, they don't get enough time off to allow for them to take on something like learning English. Like, the only time off they have is not even enough to rest, because the day that they have off, they usually can only just run to the grocery store, do their groceries, and then come back. So that's another thing. But
also, una pregunta más. ¿Tu experiencia ha sido positiva?
En mi caso, sí.
Sí, has escuchado de situaciones que no han sido tan positivas de diferentes como amigos o gente que has conocido o algo así.
Directamente no. Hay otras situaciones, pero son fuera de la, son cosas que de repente se mantienen un poquito ocultas, a lo que me refería yo hace rato. Entonces, pues no tan fácil puedes hablarlo, más que no escucharlo, hablarlo. Sí, porque involucra el temor de ser, de estar a la luz. Ahí sí yo siento más el problema. Cada cosa, dentro de las mismas, del programa en las fábricas, en la FAO, hay situaciones también complicadas, ¿sí? No nada más se engloba en la comunidad. Te repito, hay muchas cosas que no se pueden decir directamente, porque, o el temor de meterse en problemas con el patrón, o dar a la luz, muchas cosas. Eso podría ser como una investigación aparte, ¿no? Pero sí, en mi caso, a todo, hasta ahorita, bien, ¿no? Dadas las circunstancias del trabajo normal, ¿no? Pero todo lo demás bien.
So I asked that though his experience has been positive, whether he had heard about negative experiences from friends or anybody he knew that are also working in the program. He said that aside from everything he's told me, there's definitely situations that are relatively hidden and they're sort of under their radar.
that are very sort of hard to talk about and are not easily brought to light, predominantly like caused by fear. He said that there's definitely these cases, and inside the farms, for example, the farm productions themselves, like before he was referring to maybe community relations, but he said, you know, specifically inside the farms there are similar problems, and again, they can't be said directly, again, because of fear and having problems with employers, but that these problems are real and that he believes that they could be an investigation in themselves.
Any other questions you can think of? The questions that I have are really...
I can think of one. Si, por ejemplo, tenías ideas de cómo o el gobierno o este nivel más local, gente en posiciones de poder, como qué puedes suggest. Recomendar a cambios o temas que pueden que deberían de ser como identificado como algo o
dentro del programa,
sí, o la experiencia que tienes aquí o sí, algo así, como estabas diciendo, por ejemplo, el idioma es algo muy importante, ¿no? Como idioma,
yo creo que eso es lo primero. Eso es lo primero, porque en mi caso yo tengo tres meses y medio casi. Llegué con lo poco o nada de enseñanza en México. Es mi intención aprenderlo, pero por mis propios medios. Yo lo busco en métodos, en una librería, o busco algunos libros. Pongo mucha atención, pero ese es el interés que yo tengo. Dentro del programa yo siento que debería ser más forzoso que el mismo programa implementara la enseñanza al trabajador, porque se enfrenta a la situación de que el jefe, el dueño de la fama, no habla español. Sí habla inglés, pero los mexicanos o los trabajadores no lo hablan tampoco. Sí, y empiezan a haber fricciones por eso. Una, porque el dueño no se da a entender y los otros no entienden, ¿no? Entonces se vuelve roce. Hay cosas que ya vienen de años que pues difícilmente los vas a cambiar, pero el idioma yo creo que sería importante, porque en muchas ocasiones el mismo trabajador no conoce sus derechos, el dueño a lo mejor sí, pero el trabajador no. Entonces ahí también se llegan a dar algunos abusos. Precisamente yo creo por eso es lo importante del idioma, porque hasta para hacer las cosas más simples, como ir a comprar una soda, como comprar un alimento, cómo utilizar el dinero, hay gente que no lo sabe, y precisamente porque nadie le explica y no tiene el idioma, no sabe cómo utilizar un penny o cuánto vale un penny o cuánto vale un loony, un toony. Eso es algo importante que nadie les enseña. Tiene que aprenderlo a fuerza, con la experiencia más que nada. Pero yo creo que es lo primero que deberían enseñar. Antes de enseñar, de decirles tienes que trabajar esto, debería ser el idioma primero, lo básico, pero bien, porque no lo hacen.
Okay, so I asked him, for example, if he had any thoughts based on his experience of what changes or what suggestions he would have to anybody in power that could alter the program in a way to better it, what would they be? He wasn't sure at the beginning. I sort of suggested he had mentioned language as one of the barriers, and he said definitely that I think he said first and foremost language, the language barrier is very, very important. He himself puts a lot of effort into trying to take on English, learning English. He goes to libraries, he tries to get books. He has this personal interest in it, but he said that might not be the case for a lot of other workers. He thinks that it shouldn't be so left up to workers to try to work out themselves to learn English, that he thinks it should be more implemented within the program as almost like a program implementation English classes. He says that often employers, or not often, employers do not speak Spanish, and many Mexican workers do not speak English. So there's definitely the potential for friction just stemming from miscommunication. And he said that a lot of problems are hard to change in the program, but this could be something easier. A lot of the times, for example, he mentioned workers not knowing their rights and how employers might know their rights, but workers don't know their rights. So that miscommunication amongst them is a barrier like that workers aren't aware about their rights. Even simple things he said, like buying a soda, or even how to use money,
those are things that they are not taught when they come here, and basic things, you know, how to get around, how to use money, how much a penny's worth, how much a loonie's worth, how much a toonie's worth. And those are things, again, that are not explained to them, and they're expected to pick that up and learn that by experience. And things like that, he feels that should be more implemented and the responsibility of the program itself.
Último, para no tomar mucho tiempo, pero rapidísimo, ¿qué estabas haciendo en México o cómo te interesó venir a Canadá? Solo porque estamos tratando un tema que mucha gente está tratando de conectar, es a situaciones como globales, ¿no? Entendiendo como qué está pasando en países para que la gente, no es que se forzan de migrar, pero que las oportunidades a lo mejor no están tan presentes en tu país o en México, que por eso entras a programas, ¿no? Entonces, muchos estudiantes y mucha gente también quieren entender ese lado también, como lo que motiva para entrar a programas de trabajo.
Lo primero es la situación económica. Es el punto principal, porque yo creo los tres tipos de monedas más elevadas, que es el euro, el dólar canadiense, me parece que son los tres más altos. Al cambio de cualquier otro tipo de cambio de otro país, otra moneda es superior, ya sea medianamente o mucho, muy alto. El primer punto es esa situación, es dar una mejor vida a las familias. Por eso yo creo que todos estamos aquí. Independientemente de alguna otra situación que pueda traer consigo la persona, pero esa es la principal. Todos buscan una estabilidad económica buena para que le puedan dar la oportunidad a sus hijos, ya sea darles una escuela, una mejor educación, y también para que en algún tiempo el trabajador tenga un retiro, digamos así, un descanso digno, porque aquí mucha gente deja 15, 20 años trabajando. Pero eso yo creo que es la principal razón, y la falta de oportunidades por el mismo gobierno o la situación del gobierno dentro de cada país. En mi caso es México. Las pocas oportunidades, el poco dinero que se paga a los empleados del campo, de fábricas, en general. Y, por ejemplo, ahorita que acaba de pasar una situación tremenda en México, las oportunidades se cierran más todavía.
So I had asked him if he could speak to what were the motivations for him getting involved in the program. I said there was a lot of interest to try to understand like the systemic sort of forces that not only that push individuals to enter migrant worker programs, basically. He answered that first and foremost, it is fueled by, you know, an economic situation in his country. He said that, you know, the euro, the US dollar, the Canadian dollar, those are currencies that are far and above the worth of any other ones in the country. So they're seen as making that money is a huge deal. And just plain and simple, a better life to gain stability, to provide families and kids opportunities for schooling. And it definitely, the foundations are very economic based. Also, there is the interest that in being able to work for a dignified retirement and the ability for workers to make enough money so that they can retire dignified after they've worked. Obviously, the reasonings that they have to come to Canada for this, you know, stem from bad economic situations in their home countries. In his case, he said, like Mexico. Workers, being agriculture workers or manufacturing workers, are very low paid, and so there aren't those opportunities in their home country. He also spoke to current intense situation in Mexico, so, you know, opportunities are even less there. Y la última pregunta, prometo, pero ¿cómo se llama? ¿Extrañas mucho tu país o las memorias o tu familia y esas?
Bueno, hay gente que tiene es un poquito menos sensible, pero al final de cuentas extrañas mucho a la familia, a los amigos, por ejemplo, si tienes hijos, a los hijos, ¿no? Si tienen esposas, pues esposas. En su mayoría, muchos de los trabajadores tienen hijos, ¿no? pero algunos que vienen no lo tienen. Entonces los extraños son hermanos, tíos, mamás, papás. En mi caso sí, los extraño mucho. Es difícil tomar la decisión de venirse a trabajar aquí en Canadá, pero esas sabiendas de que vas a hacer algo para mejorar.
¿Y qué piensas, por ejemplo, del factor que, por ejemplo, vienen aquí temporal y que no están abiertos para la posibilidad de quedarse como permanentemente en Canadá? ¿Como eso es algo que te interesaría o obviamente tú lo ves como...?
A mí sí, definitivamente a mí sí me interesa por esta razón. Cuando yo empecé a conocer lo que era el sistema de programa, el hecho de venir una temporada, digamos, seis meses pasarlo en México. Por un lado está bien, porque no te desligas de tu familia por tanto tiempo. Pero yo a lo que... Bueno, esa es mi idea, ¿no? Yo preferiría estar 3 años continuos a separarme de mi familia 6. ¿No? Yo lo siento como que sería mejor. Claro, no todos piensan como yo, porque unos prefieren ir y venir. Me desligo 6 meses, me pongo a trabajar y luego regreso y lo disfruto 6 meses. En mi caso no, en mi caso yo sí pensaría, me gustaría mucho más el hecho de estar menos tiempo, digo 3 años, no porque no me guste Canadá, con el poquito que he estado, sino porque no estaría más tiempo lejos de mi familia. Para mí sí sería eso fabuloso. Es tomar la decisión, pero creo que es mejor. En mi caso, yo tengo una hija, tiene mañana cumple 4 años.
¿Mañana?
Sí, mañana. Para mí dejarla fue de las cosas más difíciles. Yo estoy separado de mi esposa. Estamos separados. Pero mi hija es pues mi motor, ¿no? Venirme es muy difícil, pero sé que el esfuerzo que voy a hacer, el sacrificio emocional, físico también, es para poderle darle la oportunidad que quizás yo no la tuve. Sí, porque realmente es eso. En menos tiempo. Sí. Ya puedo estabilizar mi situación en menos tiempo. Se puede hacer en México, pero tardarías mucho más. ¿Sí? Lo que yo puedo hacer aquí en 3 años, en México me tardaría 6 u 8 años más. ¿Sí? Nada más como para ponerte un ejemplo. Aquí un trabajador normalmente pudiera ganar hasta $100 en un solo día. Esos $100 para esta persona te sirve para comer una semana. ¿Sí? En México, un día te lo llegan a pagar en 100 pesos, ¿sí? O menos. Esos 100 pesos no te alcanzan para comer un solo día. ¿Sí? Y más si tienes familia. Entonces, pues nada más toma en cuenta esa diferencia abismal. ¿Por qué todos tomamos esa decisión? ¿Sí? Imagínate. Son $10 de Canadá para poder comer un solo día en México. $100 aquí en Canadá, viviendo en Canadá, alcanzan perfectamente para comer más de una semana o una semana, 2 o 3 personas. Obviamente sin excesos o algunas otras cosas. Entonces, ¿entiendes por qué la diferencia tan grande? Ahora, es para todos es para todas las áreas. Aquí hay gente, yo conozco gente que es ingenieros mecánicos, tienen profesiones de maestros, o sea, profesionistas que están trabajando el campo, que están trabajando en las empacadoras, que están trabajando en las granjas. Entonces, ¿cómo es aquí digamos, en brazo, ¿no? En el programa? Entonces imagínate qué está sucediendo para que todos hagan eso. Se supone que si tienes una profesión es para que puedas darle un mejor, bueno, para uno mismo, ¿no? Puedes tener una mejor forma de vida. Sin embargo, lo que se está dando, esas mismas personas con profesión no tienen la oportunidad, se cierra todo. ¿Sí? Entonces imagínate, un doctor, un ingeniero, trabajando en una empacadora, no sé, empacando, qué sé yo, papa, cebolla, lo que sea, ¿no? Pero no se entiende hasta que estás dentro del mismo sistema.
So I asked him what his thoughts were on the fact that that the way the program's set up, he's not, workers aren't allowed to acquire citizenship and is on a temporary basis they're allowed to come into Canada. He said that for him, he does see that this is a problem, like it is in individual cases different. For him, it would make more sense, or for example, he said for other people, it's not a problem. Or, okay, firstly, he said that some people are more sensitive than others, yes. So it's very difficult to obviously be away from your kids, your friends, your wives. It's a very difficult decision to make. It's one of the hardest of his life. But behind it, he understands that it is a decision to better yourself. So that is a primary motivation for him. His idea is that he would rather come here for 3 years straight than and be away from his family for those 3 years. So, you know, on a permanent basis for 3 years and then be able to go back to his family, opposed to having his stay be spread out. Even though he said that, you know, other workers might see reverse, they might want to see, you know, their families between those years. But for him, it would make more sense because in that way he would feel that he would be away from his family for less amount of time. He would, you know, finish the 3 years and then be able to accumulate what he would need and then be able to be reunited with his family. He said that that way, you know, he could achieve what he needs to achieve in less time. He says he has a daughter. Her birthday is actually tomorrow. And leaving her was one of the hardest things he's ever had to do. He's separated, but again, his daughter is like his motor. Coming here was a huge, huge, a very difficult decision. It was a huge sacrifice, both emotional and physical. But again, the motor behind it was to be able to give her opportunities that he did not have himself. He wanted to give an example sort of to put into perspective the motivations to come and work on this program. He said, in here, a worker is paid $100, for example, a week, let's say, working here. And that, or sorry, $100 a day would be around what he would be making here. And that's enough in Canada to eat for a week. Versus in Mexico, for a day, he would make 100 pesos, which is not enough to eat for a day. So again, if you take into consideration the fact that somebody making that amount of money has a family, then you can see, you know, a pretty big problem. And you see this huge difference and a motivating of why you would come. He says that coming to Canada just speeds up what he's trying to accomplish. He said, for example, coming to Canada and working here, he could find this economic stability in let's say, he envisions in, let's say, 3 years. Whereas in if he would want to acquire the same status, economic sort of stability, it would take him 6 to 8 in Mexico. He says he also has a lot of friends who, for example, are engineers, mechanics, mechanical engineers, different kinds of engineers, teachers, and they're all working the field. They're working packing houses within the program itself. And it really speaks to the fact that oftentimes they study, obviously, for a better life, but the way that situations are that they're having to come to this program sort of speak to the situation that they're in and how, you know, everything closes, like the doors are still closed on people who studied thinking that this was going to be a very promising sort of direction to take their life.
Muchas gracias. Yes.
What message would you like to leave with the listenership about how they can help?
I'm going to say goodbye. Bye. Nice to meet you. And goodbye. And we'll be in touch, I'm sure. So thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad that you could make it.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for organizing all this. Yeah.
Yes.
What message would you like to leave with the listenership about how they can help out the plight of migrants and more particularly migrant workers in Canada?
Entonces quería saber qué era la última comentario o cosa que querías compartir con los que estaban escuchando su programa en lo que sea o en también por ejemplo qué ellos podrían hacer para educarse de este programa o para haz algo para ayudar, digo, o solo si quieres decirle algo, un mensaje que quieren.
¿Para los radioescuchas o
para la gente que está escuchando el programa, pueden ser? Canadienses en general. Es una pregunta difícil, pero
sí. Us demanding from our government that we improve the program in certain ways, like we're just, I don't know.
encanta porque ella
doy, yo,
como ella está dando los ejemplos de, por ejemplo, dar más apreciación o, por ejemplo, ser más vocal en pedir cambios al programa, si lo hace más directo, o, pero de verdad no quiere poner palabras en tu boca para nada, entonces puede ser algo muy sincero diciendo que saben que hay lo que sea, ¿no? Últimos pensamientos de ti, de tu cabeza, de lo que estás pensando. ¿Cómo pueden apoyar los canadienses? Pero de verdad, no tiene que ser así, no tiene que ser enfermado así. La verdad puede ser los últimos pensamientos que tienes después de hablar de todo esto.
Híjole, lo que pasa pues, es que creo que hay muchas cosas de qué hablar. Te comento. Para la gente que escucha la estación, sería darle las gracias a todos los canadienses, al gobierno canadiense, por las oportunidades que abre con este programa, con el programa de trabajo. Obviamente hay muchas lagunas en todos los programas, no nada más en uno en específico. Sí, agradecer el apoyo a la gente en general, también darle las gracias porque muchos son comprensivos dentro de algunas situaciones. También apoyan a la gente, a los trabajadores. Darle las gracias a todos.
He said that he would like to thank all Canadians for these opportunities that are provided through the program. He does acknowledge that there is a lot of problems within the program, but also says that there is a lot of problem in most of the program. He wants to thank them because a lot of Canadians are involved in support initiatives and are supporting workers. So, he would like to thank everybody. Muchas gracias.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Deberías de trabajar así como por un...
More than 200,000 temporary foreign workers came to Canada last year, many as agricultural and domestic workers, but also for construction, service sector, and transportation jobs. The federal government says the Temporary Foreign Worker Program addresses short-term labor shortages, but many workers are in Canada for years. David Camfield is an associate professor in the Labor Studies Program at the University of Manitoba. He's the author of Canadian Labor in Crisis, Reinventing the Workers' Movement, and the editor of New Socialist Web Scene. He joins me now in the studio. Welcome, David. So temporary foreign workers may be working in Canada for years or sometimes decades. How do their rights differ from other Canadian workers?
Well, the fundamental difference between temporary foreign workers of whatever kind and others is that they are not either permanent residents or citizens. And this is actually really important for people because when you don't have that permanent residency or citizenship, your status in the country is that much more precarious and people are much less likely to actually stand up for their rights. Because although legally temporary foreign workers have the same rights in the workplace as anybody else, when it comes to actually making the rights real, enforcing the rights, there's a big gap there. And of course, there are many different kinds of temporary foreign workers. I just want to say one thing about that. There are people who come on work visas, 1 or 2 year visas, which are they're capped at 4 years in the country and then they have to leave. That's the bulk of people who are working in Canada as temporary foreign workers. But there are also people who come under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program, which is what many people in Manitoba are more familiar with. And there you have people who will come for less than a year at a time, 6 months or sometimes as long as 8 months, and they can come back year after year after year, but never stay through the year. And then you also have people who come under the Live-In Caregiver Program, which is a different kind of a temporary foreign worker program.
How does the worker-boss relationship differ because people are coming under a different program and are different than Canadian workers in that way?
Well, temporary foreign workers are... it depends on the situation. If you're working on a farm in southern Manitoba, your situation is quite different from those temporary foreign workers who might be working in the tar sands, for example, or as healthcare aides. But people who are hoping to be able to come back, we'll say seasonal agricultural workers, people who are hoping to be able to come back the next year to work again, are going to be much less likely to actually challenge violations of their rights if they know what their rights are. So drawing the line around things like overtime, drawing the line around having a day off, around, you know, if they're injured in the workplace, is that going to be reported the way all injuries in the workplace should be reported? Those kinds of things are much less likely to happen when workers have that insecurity, that precariousness of not being permanent residents or citizens. And so that's a major factor in the situation that affects temporary foreign workers.
Businesses recently, when there's been more attention on the program, have said that they need the program because there is a shortage of Canadian workers to take these jobs. Is there evidence that industries do need to hire temporary foreign workers?
Well, the first question is, are there really shortages? It depends on which angle you look at it. I think perhaps a more accurate way of summarizing the situation would be to say that there's a job training shortage rather than there's a shortage of workers. That is, employers will say there's a shortage if they can't find someone to do the work that they want done at the wage that they're prepared to offer. I think that's the crux of the issue. And of course, you know, if you look at even mainstream economics, the response to not being able to find people who are willing to do the work at the wage you're willing to offer should be to raise the wage or somehow improve the conditions to attract more people. But of course, if employers have a way of getting that low cost, you know, that cheap labor by bringing in temporary foreign workers, then there is a strong incentive for them to do that. So, you know, there are all sorts of issues around, you know, particular kinds of jobs that employers have difficulty filling. Often it's the worst jobs. That sometimes in other countries people use the term 3D jobs, difficult, dirty, and dangerous. But more often the situation is, you know, employers having difficulty finding people willing to do the work at the wages that they're prepared to offer, and especially, you know, people who are willing to step in, who are able to step into the job without any training. And employers have been, you know, become less and less likely to want to invest the money in training people. So for employers who are looking to you know, fill gaps in their labor force without having to provide training, without having to improve wages and working conditions, temporary foreign workers are appealing. So overall, I would say no, there's no significant shortfall. If you look at the number of unemployed people to job vacancies across the country, you know, there's not a situation where you have jobs going, you know, unfilled simply because there aren't people to do them, with perhaps the exception of small particular niches. So all the talk about labor shortages is pretty problematic.
With a lot of benefits to businesses in terms of getting to pay lower wages, having worse conditions, or...
Absolutely. The temporary foreign worker program is fundamentally a drag on wages and working conditions in the country. In places where employers have been able to bring in temporary foreign workers, they have been able to avoid, you know, pressures to try to improve those things. And the fact that the temporary foreign worker program has become much more accessible to business, so many more different sectors are now employing temporary foreign workers, you know, this has spread the problem, you know, more broadly. Some people thought that, well, if the program was supposed to do what it says it's intended to do, then you would see a drastic reduction in the use of temporary foreign workers in the last couple of years, because we've had the major economic crisis, global economic crisis, you know, starting with the recession of 2008-2009, but really dragging on. And it's actually not the case. There's still very widespread use of temporary foreign workers. So at the very end of 2012, there were 338,000 temporary foreign workers present in the country. And that, in fact, underestimates the number who worked in the country in 2012, because, of course, seasonal agricultural workers, almost entirely, or if not entirely, out of the country in December. Plus, there were people who worked in the country and left before the end of 2012 in other fields. So we're talking probably something over 400,000 people. The up-to-date stats aren't out yet. But that's very significant. So there continues to be a large number of temporary foreign workers employed. It's clearly not about, you know, people being brought in at times when the unemployment rate is low or falling.
I wanted to ask you about a case in British Columbia where HD Mining hired Chinese temporary workers for the Murray River coal project. And these workers are being paid less than the rates for unionized miners in the province. You've been critical of the union's response to the workers. Can you talk about your concerns?
Yes, the issue here is the same kind of issue that arises whenever you find temporary foreign workers being brought in to undercut the wages and working conditions of people who are already working in Canada. And I think the fundamental choice that unions face when this employers do this, and it's clear why they're doing it as a cheap labor move, is solidarity or exclusion. That is, do unions of workers who are citizens or permanent residents here reach out to these workers and try to work with them, or do they essentially attempt to push them out of the job market? And so, just to use another example from British Columbia, back in 2006, I think it was, the Construction and Specialized Workers Union in Vancouver actually reached out in a sort of solidaristic approach to Latin American workers, or rather the Latin American workers reached out to them, I think, who'd been brought in to work on the SkyTrain expansion that was being done as part of the preparation for the Olympics. And so these workers were being paid less than temporary workers brought in from Europe. They wanted to organize, and the union worked with them. And they actually had to go to court, but they actually won a significant victory for these Latin American workers. So that was a situation where the Canadian union was prepared to actually organize these workers. That's not the approach that the union took in relation to the Chinese miners. Rather than trying to develop an outreach program to try to help these people to organize to improve their wages and working conditions, the unions responded by essentially questioning whether these people should be in Canada in the first place. And this is, I think, really problematic because it ends up pitting workers who are permanent residents or citizens against these migrant workers, treating them as the enemy. And that may not be the way that it's actually said in press releases, but if you actually go to the ground level and look how it plays out, I think that's the problem. It tends to be pitting workers against each other.
Do you think unions' concerns are justified in terms of bringing more temporary foreign workers in if you leave aside the ones that are already here that could be organized? Because having temporary foreign workers here does depress wages in Canada and can make things more precarious for unionized and non-unionized workers.
Right. But the question is, will trying to exclude the temporary foreign workers end up improving the situation or not? And I think if we look at the history of immigration and work, we find that those kind of exclusionary responses don't really work. They don't end up actually improving the situation. I mean, you can carry this through to its logical conclusion. Should the borders of the country be closed to all temporary migration or to all migration? Look, for example, at the Great Depression when the borders were virtually impossible to cross. There was almost no immigration into the country. It didn't prevent employers from driving down wages and working conditions. And in fact, tying workers in Canada more towards nationalism is pointing in the wrong direction in a world that's increasingly globalized, where capital can move across borders, even if people can't move freely. The challenge is, how do we build stronger ties of solidarity across borders between workers, I think, and campaigning against migration, I think, cuts in the wrong direction rather than looking towards building international solidarity. I mean, it's really difficult. These are not easy questions. And, you know, you have to be able to talk to for example, the people who are Canadian citizens in BC who'd want to work in mines and who are denied the opportunity to work in those mining jobs. You have to talk to them. You can't, you know, simply stand on one side of the divide or the other. You have to address both groups of workers and to try to reject the employer attempts to divide and pit workers against each other by coming up with alternative demands for job creation. And I think actually, in the case of the coal mining situation, it's a challenge for the labor movement to integrate an ecological perspective, because coal mining is terrible ecologically in terms of the production of greenhouse gases. We don't need more coal. So unions need to be taking up a kind of a green job creation approach there, which, you know, actually tries to fight for meaningful jobs for people in rural or remote communities where the mines are an attractive proposition for people. And that's challenging. But I think if we're thinking about not just being really reactive in the short term, it's important to think about these things.
What are the challenges you've talked about the workers in BC who are working on the transit line, but what are the challenges for unions or other activists in reaching out and trying to help organize with temporary foreign workers?
Yeah, so sometimes, for example, with seasonal agriculture workers, the workers are physically isolated from the urban centers, and there are not too many left activists who are doing this kind of work in rural communities. Some are, but there are language barriers, cultural barriers. There's fear on the part of the temporary foreign workers. People sometimes are, you know, they come as, again, to take the case of agricultural workers, they're coming, they're prepared to work incredibly hard for short periods of time, less than a year, in order to be able to take their wages back, send their wages back home, and they're prepared to accept terrible conditions because the conditions here are still better than the conditions back in their countries of origin. So you got to find a way of responding to that. There's the challenge of the active employer opposition to workers organizing. And we saw this in Manitoba, where there was a case of workers at one farm who successfully unionized migrant workers. But then these are Mexican workers, and the Mexican consulate and the employer, I think, together got workers subsequently to decertify the union. And so you have the challenge there of the, you know, the pressure coming from different sides on migrant workers. So, you know, these are difficult situations, absolutely. But that's why it's, I think, so important to try to have a long-term approach to organizing in solidarity with, and it's helping these workers to organize themselves. And there certainly have been cases of migrant workers, not just that case in Vancouver that I mentioned, but elsewhere, of migrant workers organizing themselves and occasionally even engaging in wildcat strikes to try to put pressure on their employers. And so it's incumbent on activists here to try to build those links.
I wanted to ask you about another case, and it was recently in the media, where RBC had hired 45 information technology jobs. I think they had outsourced them, and some of them were temporary foreign workers. And there was quite a response to that, and this seemed to prompt the federal government to act on the program. I was just wondering what your thoughts were and why there was a reaction to these types of jobs, which are more, probably more white-collar or office-type jobs rather than the other types of temporary foreign workers.
Yeah, I should just say one thing about the RBC case is that although it was reported as being temporary foreign worker program workers, my understanding is really there was there's another stream called intercompany transfer, which allows people, allows companies to transfer workers between locations, and that was the particular program that was involved. But why did it get such a big focus? Well, I think because these were not people working on farms, for example. These were not people washing dishes. They're not people, you know, working in long-term care facilities or in the tar sands. These were the kind of workers who were supposed to be the face of the new economy. These were people in information services jobs, and so it, I think, was a lot more culturally mainstream, if you like, or these people were doing work that was higher status. And so I think that was the main reason it had this kind of resonance, the kind of industry, the fact it was located in a, you know, major urban center. And so there was a kind of more of a fit there, and then the media picked up on it. But it had a real resonance. I think you're right. I mean, it really struck a chord with people because there's a lot of fear in a situation where unemployment remains where it is, and people who are employed find it increasingly difficult to find, you know, decent jobs, that the prospect of workers being brought in from another country to work here as a step towards the major multinational firm, then outsourcing the work out of the country, was seen as, you know, maybe a symbol of all that's wrong. You know, it's one thing to have jobs shipped overseas, but to have the gall of people being brought in to learn how to do it in Canada, I guess it just got up people's noses that much more. And so it did put the program and the Harper government under the spotlight, absolutely. And it's forced them to back off on temporarily on some changes that were made to the program. But I think the program still continues more or less full speed ahead.
And they had to back off a little bit on wages, the lower wages that businesses could pay.
That's right. There was this provision, was complicated, but it allowed people to be paid 15% less than, you know, what was the prevailing wage in Canada. And that's one of the things, along with the accelerated process for bringing in temporary foreign workers, that's been frozen while the Harper government investigates what it's going to do, so it says.
Well, thank you, David, for coming in today.
Well, thanks, and I really appreciate you taking the time to look at this kind of issue in depth.
I've been speaking with David Campfield. He's with the Labor Studies Department at University of Manitoba, and you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.